Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Refer to the prophecy of the one who will bring balance to the Force. You believe it's this boy?
He can see things before they happen.
He can help you.
The Force is unusually strong with him.
He was meant to help you.
Anakin! Tell him to take off!
Will I ever see you again?
What does your heart tell you?
Are you sure about this? Trusting our fate to a boy we hardly know?
Anakin Skywalker, meet Obi-Wan Kenobi.
I sense much fear in you.
The boy is dangerous. They all sense it. Why can't you?
Fear is the path to the dark side. Fear leads to anger. Anger leads to hate. Hate leads to suffering.
Hello and welcome to another Star Wars side special. This week we'll be heading once again to a galaxy far, far away to look into the past and fill in the details about Darth Vader when he was 10 years old. You know, that literally no one cares about. Yes, it's Star Wars Episode 1, The Phantom Menace. And joining me to Sith through the damage is Jedi Master, who is here today, Qui-Gon tomorrow. Tom Crowley.
Tom Crowley, that's me. He said my name. Hello. I think of myself more as your Padawan, John Rain, with my strange little rat tail that I always wear when I do these podcasts.
Does that mean I have to behave incredibly recklessly throughout the entire film?
You have to be defined by two major characteristics, being incredibly sort of wise and noble and also like astonishingly careless and reckless.
And naive. Well.
Yeah, and sort of, weirdly naive as well, yeah. Perfect.
Yeah. So
that's how I think of you anyway.
Oh, thank you very much. That's the best thing anyone's ever said to me, including my own
strangely,
mother.
Strangely, petulant Liam Neeson.
He has a very particular set of skills in this film.
He does.
You have to say
one of them is one of them is having every accent at once.
Yeah. So, Phantom Menace, how old were you when this film came out?
I was 11 years old when The Phantom Menace came out, John, and I'm very sorry to have to tell you that. I know that dating these things upsets you sometimes.
Nah, it's fine, it's fine.
In our ages.
I was now literally double your age, but that's fine.
Yeah, well, excellent. Yeah. Well, luckily, you'll never be double my age again
that's
after
right.
that point.
That's right.
They call it the Phantom Menace Equinox.
That's right.
Anyway,
yeah.
So this was, as loyal SmirchPod listeners will know, this when we cover the Harry Potter films with Tom Noonan in the Snake Boys side specials, it's me coming in as the outsider, really, because I was not a Harry Potter fan. And if anything, in that childish way, I, you know, defined myself as not being a Harry Potter fan and not liking it and thinking it was rubbish. Mm. And now, as an adult, I can take a longer view of it, luckily. Now, this is the opposite of that. I was exactly the right age to be into this.
Like, I was going to say, yeah.
Totally into this. Mm. Yeah, perfect. Phantom Menace, 11 years old, spot on. Mm. A kind of synchronicity that doesn't really happen ever again with any other ages for the rest of the prequels. But what age are you meant to be to enjoy Attack of the Clones? I'm not sure.
Well, quite.
Anyway, we'll get to that later. Mm. But yeah, no, I was so into this, and I was just the right age as well to have seen the, was it 97? Re-releases of the special editions, yeah, that's right. And I, until then, all I'd seen was a VHS recording off the telly, which is a rare thing for Star Wars films, just of Return of the Jedi. Mm. So I, you know, knew by reputation sort of Star Wars sort of whispered as sort of pop culture legend what these films were, but I'd only seen the final part of the trilogy. Mm. So I'd had all the reveals blown for me already.
Of course.
With, you know, Leia is Luke's sister, Darth Vader's their dad, and
Yoda's,
I think we've covered
uncle.
This before, in fact. Yoda's their uncle, and Fanny is your aunt.
Yeah.
Fanny Bottles, who I assume is a Star Wars person.
He's that one with the big neck.
That's right. The one he gives me anxiety because I worry someone's going to snap his neck by just
I worry about
him
getting off a helicopter.
Oh, yeah, like in Dawn of the Dead.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's coming clean off. Mm. But yeah, so it's Phantom Menace. I was just the right age when it came out. I saw, I think, if I remember correctly, I think somebody I knew had sort of tickets to see some advanced screening of it as well.
Well, I was going to say, Tom Crowley, please paint us a picture of the first time
a picture
you saw
of me
Phantom Menace.
Well, so not only am I excited to see this film, not only have I am I just the right age to see it and have I been excited by it, like everyone else with the trailers and things, I was also a consumer of comics and of the Star Wars magazine that Titan Books was putting out at that time. So I was sort of saturated in all the hype, all the stuff that was going to come up in this film.
Yeah.
And it was really sort of, I was young enough and it was set up so perfectly that there was no chance I wasn't going to like this film. And I can't remember at what point it turned where it felt like suddenly everyone sort of thought it was terrible. But it sort of mystified me as a kid, and I, you know, had a real sense like, oh, I don't know, I liked it, I don't care. So I seem to remember, and again, I have no idea how much of this is me Mandela affecting myself, but I seem to recall it being in Leicester Square, at one of the huge cinemas in Leicester Square, some sort of preview screening. I remember I saw Lizo Mazimba, who was on Newsround at the time, wandering around. So it must have been some sort of advanced press screening. And just being having my socks absolutely knocked off.
Oh, I imagine.
It's a haze, and it's swallowed. The experience of actually seeing it for the first time is swallowed up by playing the companion video games at friends' houses and poring over the trailer before the movie and, you know, all that. So, yeah, the actual experience of it, I just remember being completely swept away with it like it was the best thing I'd ever seen in my life. And so that was my experience of the film then at the age of 11.
Wow. Right. Well, I was 22.
Yep. And how did you find it?
I went to the, I remember the, seeing the premiere of the trailer on The Big Breakfast.
Oh,
just
my
thinking,
God. Yeah, you're
this
right.
This is the most exciting thing I've ever seen.
Yes.
And then a friend and I went to the cinema on the day it came out to buy tickets for the evening with our other friends. And when we got there, there was a screening about to start and it was half empty. So we went in and watched it.
Yeah.
And I had that thing where I came out thinking it was amazing.
Yeah.
And then it's like a, it was like a slow roll down a hill with a few days later, I was like, actually, that wasn't very good. But I kept talking myself into the fact that it was good.
Interesting. Well, it's also like you don't want it to be bad because, you know, this is the thing that occurred to me first on this viewing was finding the film on Disney Plus, because you go into the Star Wars section, which is prominently displayed, and the Star Wars films is the second highest listed category
yeah.
within Star Wars. Top is originals, which is, you know, The Mandalorian, something called Young Jedi Adventures, which I think is like a cartoon, The Bad Batch, etc., and Visions 2 that's just come out. And you go, it's so different to when I was a kid.
Yeah.
And if you liked Star Wars, it was like, firstly, they were quite stingy with when they released it on home video.
Yeah.
So you might not even have access to that. You might not even be able to watch the films again. And also, like, there was no supporting material that wasn't sort of, you didn't have films and TV shows. You had the odd video game, which was still fairly primitive in those times. And you also had books and comics, and that was all you had.
That was it, yeah.
And so now it's like it's more Star Wars than anyone can bloody stand.
Yeah.
Absolutely sick of Star Wars. Put Star Wars away, please. You want it to be brilliant because it's the first chance you've had of like a full, proper, big-budget Star Wars since... Ewoks Return to the Forbidden Valley, or whatever it was called, since after Return of the Jedi.
Yeah. It was an exciting feeling. And
yeah.
Well, should we talk about it?
Let's talk about it.
Yeah, so...
That's what we're here to do, isn't it?
Well, we get the long time ago in a galaxy far, far away, which I remember everybody screaming and applauding at in the cinema.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
And then,
when that Star Wars goes bang, I mean, like that, I remember that vividly, that sense of the excitement of that in the cinema. That was incredible. And then, what I don't remember is then what really struck me this time, where instants later, you can smell there's trouble at Mill.
Yeah.
When the first paragraph of the text crawl is, you know, turmoil has engulfed the Galactic Republic. Okay, sure. And then the second sentence is, the taxation of trade routes is to outlying star systems is in dispute. And you go, oh my God, this is... When did they settle on this as the real hook on which to hang the entire plot of this film?
I want it to be hairy boob monsters have taken the president prisoner.
Yeah, exactly. Bail Organa has been captured by a Sith Lord that's just a big spider with a massive mono boob covered in hair.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Oh, beautiful. Brilliant. Great. Oh,
this feels like it was there were two cuts of the film. One was for excited man, children and children. The other one was for a convention of accountants. And unfortunately, the convention of accountants version has been released.
Exactly. It's sort of like it reads like a pamphlet about Brexit, doesn't it?
Yeah,
like, it does. Like we need to free up our trade routes and, you know, create more independence from the Galactic Senate.
Well, what I don't understand is it says the Supreme Chancellor has... Sorry, I'll start again. What I don't understand is it says the Supreme Chancellor has secretly sent two Jedis to sort out a trade dispute, which is like sending like your two judo champions to smooth over the China-United States trade war.
Yeah, or like a SWAT team to go to the International Monetary Fund and ask for some money.
Yeah, like, it makes no
you
sense.
Might give it to them, but not, you know, it's not very diplomatic, is it?
Especially these two Jedis, because one is, as we mentioned before, wise but well thick. And the other one's just a bit dopey.
He's a little bit dopey, yeah. Although that does make sense, given that he's, you know, still, he's on it, he's learning.
Yeah,
you know,
but why send those two? Why not send Mace Windu and Yoda?
That would make sense. Also, they both are a bit less, like, you know, laser sword first, ask questions later, aren't they? But those two, you feel like they're the real, you know, level heads of the operation.
But yeah, so the
what do you think Yaddle's like? Yaddle, the Lady Yoda, who's glimpsed in the background.
Yeah, she's
you think
just,
she's also level-headed, or she's like fucking nuts? Like what?
She just lies around fondling her and Yoda boo-boos.
Nursing a little Grogu or whatever it might be.
Yeah. No, she's probably out having fun.
She's out on the town in Coruscant.
Yeah.
Having a crazy time getting... off her head on Tequila Slammers or whatever the long time ago equivalent of that is.
You want a death stick?
Death sticks! More on that later in a later film. Yeah, getting off her tits on... off her little Yoda tits on death sticks and, getting drunk very quickly because she's only small.
She is only small. She's the opposite of Andrew the Giant.
That's right.
Yeah.
She's the opposite of Andrew the Giant and Chewbacca, who could drink Han Solo under the table.
That's right. He could literally pick up Han Solo and drink him.
He did, and he did in several deleted scenes.
That's disgusting.
Awful.
So the people driving the spaceship that lands on the Trade Federation donut.
Yes, that's right.
Is Brona Garriga.
Yeah,
I can't speak
today.
Yeah,
that's right. Spotted her. Yeah, she's brilliant.
She says, with all due respect, which I always enjoy as an opening gambit.
With, you don't which, need to which say again, that. In that accent makes me think, with all due respect, You're a cunt.
Yeah, exactly.
You've always been a cunt. Nothing's going to change. You'll just be a bigger cunt.
Yeah, don't say that. We haven't met
sorry,
them yet.
Sorry. Apologies.
Yeah. Say that when we're leaving.
All right, okay, fair enough.
So they drop off the Jedi. The Jedi's go in with a C-3PO-looking motherfucker. And this bit...
Yeah, who is played by Lindsay Duncan.
No.
Yeah.
Is it?
I was checking for Brona Gallagher. It's like, is that her? And I saw like the first credit after the lead cast is Lindsay Duncan as, what is it, TC-14 or whatever.
Oh, my God.
Duncan as a C-3PO.
I tell you, the sky was black that night, my friend, because all the stars were in The Phantom Menace.
That's right. And the nightingale sang in Berkeley Square.
Yeah.
So there were angels dancing in The Phantom Menace, and you had the Rancor sang.
The Rancor sang. You had the PlayStation 1 game, I take it.
I played the PlayStation 1. I think I had it on the PC or something. Okay. But yeah, it's. I went back to it again recently with the power of emulation. And yeah. It's not very good.
That's terrible.
But the idea, it was still early 3D games, so it was really like exciting that you could wander around a real like Naboo or Tatooine.
My biggest takeaway from it was its dramatization of this scene in particular, with the voice acting of, which I've clipped, I'll put in here.
I have a bad feeling about this.
Your feelings serve you well, Obi-Wan, but don't let them cloud your judgment.
What is your plan, Qui-Gon?
When the Trade Federation Viceroy arrives, we must convince him to leave the system.
Will they agree to leave?
The Viceroys are cowards. This meeting will be short.
That's very fun.
Great. Very compelling.
Very compelling. So then, this is again an example of what we're dealing with here, because Obi-Wan's first line is, "I have a bad feeling about this."
That's right. Straight in. Drop that right away.
And then Qui-Gon just goes, "I don't sense anything."
Yeah, strange that. There's a few points like that where they just don't seem to kind of be on the same page. And you go, surely to show that either of them is strong in the Force, you suggest that they share some sort of understanding.
It just says
is Qui-Gon Jinn, like, is he just sort of like the work experience guy? Like, he's not actually a Jedi.
He got
promoted above his station or what?
He's like one of those people that runs out when the football team's there and one pretends to be the football team to get their photo taken with them. He's just put the robes on and they just assume he's a Jedi.
I mean, that's all you had to do in them days in the Old Republic. Just put a brown cloak on and it was like, oh, shit, watch out for that guy. He's a Jedi.
Should we talk about the robes? A lot of people get upset about the robe situation because...
Oh, I didn't know about that. Tell me about why they're upset.
Well, the fact that Uncle Owen is wearing those robes in A New Hope. So that's kind of like the uniform of a moisture farmer. But for some reason, it's been sort of mutated into that's how Jedi's dress.
Right, okay.
Because Obi-Wan's
so dressed
like that
Star Wars clothes.
Yeah, Obi-Wan's dressed like in A New Hope, but it makes sense because he's in hiding. But it doesn't make sense that all Jedi's dressed like that.
Oh, that's interesting. You know, I never even put that together. Again, I think because this film came out too early in my life for me to question it.
Mm.
But that's a really good point. Yeah, why aren't they all sort of dressed like kind of zero AD Jerusalem shepherds?
Yeah, I mean, they should be dressed like Luke at the end of Jedi, surely, in their black...
Yeah, in the kind of cool combat gear. Yeah, that would make more sense. Cool. Though I suppose he's like meant to look a bit Sithy.
Yeah. Mm. I guess also Qui-Gon's supposed to be a bit of a hippie, isn't he?
Yeah, well, I mean, look at his hair, for God's sake. He should be in Woodstock smoking a fatty boom batty and, you know, carousing with some hippie ladies with tentacles coming out their heads.
He should be sitting on the stage with Joan E. Mitchell... singing about Woodstocko.
Who has a big trunk.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, Woolly stock. Oh, yes.
And they paved all the panthers, turned it to paradise.
I light my lightsaber from both sides now. It's
beautiful.
Different
Everyone was at Space Woodstock.
Yeah, that's right. Mm. That's right.
I bet even Max Rebo was at Space Woodstock.
Max Rebo, yeah, he was at the pyramid stage.
It's a bit sad that Max Rebo, his band is named after him, but the guys from A New Hope are just called the Cantina Band.
Aren't they called, like, Figrin Dan or something?
Oh, are they?
And the Modal Nodes or something?
Okay.
I mean, they're
sure.
called the Cantina Band, right? This might be a sort of Wikipedia retconning.
Yeah, I think it is.
A bit like these Jedi robes.
And the Jedi rocks.
Yeah, the Jedi rocks.
That little guy shows you his tonsils. It looks awful.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yes, I remember that. Yeah,
there's a lot of that going on in this, actually.
plenty. We'll get to that as well.
So, yeah, Qui-Gon doesn't sense anything. And he says, keep your mind in the now. And then Obi-Wan says, it's not about the mission, Master. It's something elusive. And again, Qui-Gon's like, nothing, can't feel anything.
But then it is about the mission, isn't it? Because they're about to be murdered. Yeah.
Surely Qui-Gon should be picking up on that.
And also, surely Qui-Gon should be going, surely if anything, he should be thinking something, because he's going, oh, I'm about to meet someone important in Anakin. But no,
he should do the classic, actually, Obi-Wan, can you feel that? And he'll go, what? And he'll go,
I thought you were going to say, like, tickle his balls.
Oh, that would be even funnier. Yeah, feel that.
Yeah, that would be good.
That's the Force, that is. And that could be a callback.
That's the Force. It's a disturbance in the Force. I am feeling quite disturbed now, Qui-Gon. Thank you. I'm feeling a disturbance in the Force very strongly.
So he says, like in the video game, they're cowards, negotiations will be short. And the Trade Federation, we cut to them, who are like, they're what? They're Jedi Knights, I assume. Oh, you said nothing about Jedi Knight.
And Pop is there, of course. Pop's there.
How many Jedi Knights?
The Nemoidians. How many trade delegations? now, the guy playing the main Chinese alien, who's called Newt Gunray, is an actor called Silas Carson, who you may have seen in many things. Like, I've seen him all over telly recently. I think he's sort of someone who, he's gone white in the hair, and it's really helped his sort of castability, so you might recognise him.
I'm going to look him up live now. Silas Carson.
Okay. Silas Carson. John is searching for Silas Carson.
Oh, yeah. I've seen him a lot.
Yeah, he was in The Gold recently as one of the coppers.
Yes, he was. Oh, wow. Well, good for him.
Good for him.
Good for him getting to play Pops.
He's allowed to act now without a big pair of rubbery lips all over his
face. Is he in the costume or is he just doing the voice?
Do you know, I don't know. He played several characters, which either means he's like a sort of a skin actor, as they call them, people who wear, work in costumes mainly, or he just did the voices, but it's not clear. I think he's standing there. I think so.
Okay.
We'll have to ask him.
Yeah, we'll have to ask him. We'll have to get him on.
Chase him down.
So they're both too scared to go and speak to these Jedis, and I think if they'd have seen what they're like, they wouldn't have been.
No, that's true. That's fair. Well, also, I mean, not only because they seem to be idiots from what little we've gained so far, but also very soon after this is something I'd never noticed before, where they do a sort of the Flash force speed run
down insane. A corridor. That is insane.
Which I never even noticed before. It's so quick, but it looks so stupid.
Can you think of how many times that would have been useful for the rest of these films? Yeah, it's never seen
again. I mean... Yeah. Absolutely. And like that's, again, it's one of those sort of weird force powers. Well, we'll talk more about this later, I think, but like one of those weird force powers that works in the context of Star Wars Dark Forces 2 Jedi Knight for the MS-DOS
Benidorm
Windows PC.
Lads.
That's right. Benidorm Lads. Benidorm Raid. No, you can't cross the street.
No, we can't cross the street.
Can't cross the lightsabers with the British gangster films. But like that makes sense when you have a sort of video game where you have a bunch of different powers that you can deploy for the gameplay, but in a film just looks stupid.
Yeah.
Suddenly demystifies the noble Jedi Knights a bit.
Also, they've made these Federation guys by being stupid and cowardly. They've triggered Qui-Gon because a minute ago he couldn't sense anything. They send in a droid with drinks that they drink without questioning it, by the way, which could have been poison.
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
which is insane. And then
they haven't got poison in Star Wars world, John. That's been well established.
Oh, they've got worms and stuff.
They've got interstellar travel, but you can't poison things. No. That's impossible.
That's true. But then
one of the strange quirks of canon.
Obi-Wan says to Qui-Gon, I sense an unusual amount of fear for a trade dispute. And he goes, that's right. He says... Qui-Gon says, I sense an unusual amount of fear for anything as trivial as a trade dispute. And if I was Obi-Wan, I'd go, hang on a minute. A minute ago,
I said
I got a bad feeling about this, and you said, shut the fuck up. So where are we on this?
This is the manager who just parrots one of his underlings' opinions in a meeting.
Yeah.
As though it was his own idea, and everyone, all the sycophants, go, yeah, you're right, Qui-Gon, yeah. Mm-hmm. Like Obi-Wan says, look, we're really going to have to do more work to target the sort of key 50 to 65 demographic. Mm. And then just no one responds to that. And then 2 minutes later, Qui-Gon says, yeah, I just don't think we're targeting the 50 to 65 demographic enough. And everyone goes, yeah, that's so clever, Qui-Gon. Well done. Great job. Yeah, this is why you're in charge. What a genius. And Obi-Wan's left there like fucking chopped liver.
Unbelievable. He's thinking, unbelievable. I hope you get stabbed one day.
Yeah, I hope sometime not too long from now you get stabbed right through the stomach.
But then Darth Sidious appears, who's clearly Ian McDermott.
Ian McDermott is Senator Palpatine, yeah. Yeah, it's him.
He turns up and he goes, the game's up, Palpatine, Sidious, whatever your name is. The Jedi's are here. And he goes, get this stunted slime out of my sight.
Yes.
Bit rude.
Very, very angry about it.
His name's Clive, actually, and he's my husband.
So could you please show some respect? He's piloting this whole bloody donut. Did you not realise that
it's his birthday?
He's in charge
today,
of the whole thing,
and you've called him a stunted slime. I was taking him to play with his Scalextrix in a minute, and now he's crying.
I'm very sorry, Clive. I didn't mean to call you a bad name on your birthday.
It's okay, really. No, he's being nice, but I'm livid.
Yeah.
Anyway, what do you want?
I'm sorry, Newt Gunray, leader of the trade delegation.
It's a good voice. It's a good wheeze to get that job.
Where you just talk like this for 50 years in every conceivable product.
Ian McDermott, right, all he has to do is turn up to one of these Star Wars celebrations, which luckily for him now, they're annually. A few 20 years ago, they were probably every 5 years.
Yeah, well, I wonder, because on the one hand, there's way more of that stuff now, and there's way more money in it. But on the other hand, when there's less of it, the fans are more desperate to connect with it, right? Could go either way.
But I saw him recently, just walked down stage, went, hello, I'm the Emperor. And everyone's like,
way.
He must be thinking, this is fucking easy.
Mm. Well, I mean, in this film, he walks in, as both Darth Sidious and... as Senator Palpatine, and you go, yes, it's the Emperor,
yes,
obviously.
Yes, same fella.
It's weird, it's not clear how they're gauging it. Is it a bit hedging their bets? Like, some people are newcomers to Star Wars, they don't know the same guy. But then, obviously, for most people watching it, you go, yes, yeah, Emperor Palpatine.
I mean, we should possibly mention, just as a sidebar, that you remember the hysterical, because obviously the internet was in its infancy.
Yeah.
There was hysterical fanning going on at this time. Do you remember the people going to... I mean, this happened with the original Star Wars, apparently, but people were going to see a particular film just so they saw the Phantom Menace trailer and then leaving.
Oh, yes. No, that was... I remember that very well. But it carried on, didn't it? Because there were other films that happened with that were enormously hyped.
Mm.
And, I mean, wasn't that true of Avatar, even, or something?
I think it
was, there were. Yeah. And, it didn't seem that crazy.
Blame it on the bellboy.
Because now, obviously... What?
That happened with Blame It on the Bellboy.
Oh, yeah, of course. Yeah. I remember back in the day. I mean, Carry On Doctor, that was, people were lining up outside of, what was it? It was I'm All Right, Jack, to see the trailer for...
That's right.
The dates for that won't work out at all. I just had to think of a film from roughly that era.
But I'd like to have been one of the... I'd like to talk to one of the people in that. There's a video that everybody always posts. It's the people getting their ticket checked for the first night of The Phantom Menace. So they're going in... Tickets ripped or whatever, and one of them drops to his knees, and is crying because he's about to go and watch The Phantom Menace. I mean, in hindsight, that's appropriate response, but
at the time, excessive.
Yeah. Excessive.
If they played the footage backwards, that was him coming out of the Phantom Menace. There's a secret cut in there that you don't see where they in the interim he's watched it, and then cut to him collapsing and weeping on the floor.
But it was huge, you know, and it was the end of a century.
It was massive, yeah.
You know, we're crossing over into the 21st century here.
Yeah, I mean, so many big moments as well in film. Like this film, I think, has the first two scenes ever shot on digital film.
Yeah,
like straight to digital footage, and it's so good you don't notice. But it was unheard of to do that, and only kind of small time independent films in the 90s were doing that.
Yeah,
and Lucas moved, pushed for that big shift into digital stuff, which it's got its pluses and minuses, but it did hugely open up digital filmmaking, which is way more affordable for small-time people. So it did a lot of good, and it also marked a lot of transitions. And unfortunately, in the case of computer-generated effects, some of them have aged better than others.
Yeah, like Jar Jar, for instance, which we'll get to in a bit.
Mm.
I should point out my neighbour has decided at this moment in time to start drilling in the wall, if you can hear that.
Okay, well, I did hear a very distant, dim sound. Yeah.
That's great.
Do you want to take a pause now?
No, it's fine. We'll just plough through. Everyone at home understands.
All right, everyone at home. So just imagine, just if you hear a sort of whirring sound, just imagine that that's John's prosthetic penis whirring into action.
Yeah.
And reaching the appropriate angle for recording a podcast.
It's attempting tumescence.
He's attempting re-entry.
Yeah.
That's relevant, isn't it, Smirch Pod?
There you go. Mm. So Sidious says that they're going to have to start their invasion of Naboo.
Yep. Yeah, that's right.
And so he says...
I don't know why Naboo's so important, by the way.
No, like, it makes no sense.
No. It just seems like Amidala is sort of a prominent figure. It's like Jacinda Ardern or something.
Mm.
You know, like she's striking. So it's the anti-woke trade federation.
Yeah,
that are coming in to, like, you know, insult Jacinda Ardern, the Queen of Naboo, and in doing so, sort of strike a blow against the wokes worldwide.
That's right, because they get everything.
That's the only way it makes sense.
Yeah,
yeah.
So they're going to have. He says, "What about the Jedi?" And he says, "Kill them immediately."
Kill them. Yeah.
So we get the. How do you feel about the Roger droids?
Oh, I think they're cute. I think it's a weird thing they've done where I think when they start swinging the lightsabers around, you go, oh, very, you know, impressive, great gymnastic and choreography.
Mm.
But then you sort of see a close-up of Qui-Gon take one down and it's so obviously a computer thing that isn't really there that it just makes it so much less fun straight away.
Yeah.
But what they have done is for a family film, they've made them robots so that you can just mow through hordes of them and it doesn't matter.
Exactly.
Like, it's fine. They're not real. It's fine.
I think
kill them all.
Quite fun.
But I think they're very cute, but it's weird that your cannon fodder villain is so very cute.
Mm. Yeah, there's a cute little video actually of, because I don't know if anyone's ever watched it, but there's a behind the scenes documentary from The Phantom Menace, which, you know, George Lucas gets a lot of jip. And I think through the benefit of time, people can see that he meant well. Obviously.
Yes.
He let this documentary go out and it's very frank.
Oh, really?
It's very honest. And there's bits in it where famously people always post the clip where he says when they watched the first screening of him going, yeah, I think I went too far.
I may have gone too far in a few places.
And yeah.
He looks quite annoyed about it. But yeah, in that little video, Steven Spielberg visits the set, which was the old Rolls-Royce factory in Leavesden, Watford.
Oh, wow.
Cool. They also filmed GoldenEye. And he's walking around on the soundstage outside and showing Steven Spielberg all the Roger droids, which is quite cute.
Oh, that's nice. I need to watch that properly. I've seen various clips here and there.
Hmm.
Like, there's a very famous one, I think, where Lucas comes in and it's just like a little office. It looks so mundane. It looks like The Office, the American person.
Yeah.
And at Skywalker Ranch or wherever.
Hmm.
And he comes out and there's just a sort of PA or lady sat at a desk. And he goes, that's the first draft done, and just drops this sort of phone book looking thing on the desk. And she goes, yay, just like a little, like you would if someone said, oh, I got the quarterly report done.
It's like he's coming and gone, I done poo-poo.
I done poo-poo all by myself.
Yay.
And then he drops this script down and he says, like, you know, there's some filler in there. There's a lot of, you know, they fight. And then you go, like, I'd be fascinated to see that first draft. And you're like, what's this? You know, it looks so long as well.
There's that footage of him in 1994 dropping off his kids at school. It might have meant a poo. I don't know. But he says, I've just dropped the kids off at school.
I just dropped off my kids at school.
And he goes
by myself.
Yay! He goes into his little, I want to say shed, but it's not really. It's a big thing at the back of his house. Sits down
is
his
that Roald
desk.
Dahl's little writing shed
sort
with the little wooden board across his lap?
That's right, and the beer mats for some reason.
That's right.
Yeah, and he gets out a little journalist notepad. He sharpens his pencils and he sits down and starts literally handwriting the script of Phantom Menace.
Episode 3-1.
Looks around the room and there's a ghost looking at him. Phantom.
Phantom.
Looks next to him.
And then
him.
A picture of Dennis the Menace. Menace. Now, what could that be?
And I'm imagining the ghost is just a sheet with the eyes cut out.
Yeah, yeah, no, absolutely. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And he's going like, okay, who's going to be the bad guy? And outside, his gardener falls over and his head goes into a big sort of thorny bush. And he stands up. He's bald.
Yeah.
He stands up and there's rivers of blood sort of running down his face. And he's got a kind of crown of thorns like Jesus. And he goes, perfect. And just
Jesus Christ is the bad guy. I mean, Darth Maul.
Jesus Christ. It'd be amazing, wouldn't it, if Lucas, having sold Star Wars, suddenly said, like, oh, it's a satanic tract. It's all about evil empire is Christ's profane Christianity, and the Jedi are actually Satanists. And, of course, the Sith represent the Pope and all of his cardinals. He'd be like, wow, we never saw any of that coming. My God.
And then every time he's interviewed, he's dressed like a proper emo.
Yeah, his big sort of floppy black hair like over half his face. Yeah, brilliant. The new emo reinvention of George Lucas. I'm well here for it.
Have you ever seen that that clip of someone just filming themselves in San Francisco doing a documentary, and George Lucas just walks in the background of his shot?
No,
he's just out sort of being a little old man walking around town. Oh. And he just bumbles through the back of the shot, looks at the camera once, then walks past. Walking like he does, I always find George Lucas walks like the Gimli Patterson footage of the Bigfoot.
Yeah, so a bit of a lumber to him. Is he quite tall?
I think so.
Yeah. Well, maybe. Yeah. Anyway, well, we've got an eyewitness later to share some wisdom on that. So we will.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
But we'll come to that. We'll come
back
to that.
The film. Loads of the droids. And then,
Robos,
as you say, they send the droid dickheads. And
send in the droid dickheads.
And that's when they run at 3.8 billion miles an hour.
Yep, that's right.
Yeah, not sure correct. Why. Never do it again.
No, never do it again. Zoom, off they go. Also, really good time to show off your main characters. Have them run away really fast, like almost with Hanna-Barbera sort of sounds underneath them.
Feet don't fail me now.
Feet don't fail me now.
And then he says, they're no match for droid dickheads.
How many droid dickheads?
Two droid dickheads.
And then they are a match for them, right? They just are. They do fine.
And then he says, well, it's an invasion army. We better split up. They're going to Naboo. And then Obi-Wan should say, why are we splitting up?
Yeah, I mean, also you could say, why are we going down here? I mean, I don't really understand. The first 20, 30 minutes of this film are really strange. And I feel like they only make sense if you understand them as... Hello, it's Star Wars. Star Wars is different now. It's sort of more colourful. There's this old Republic going on, and we've also got loads more money, and we've got computer effects. So we're going to take you on a roller coaster ride of all this different stuff we can do now. Now that we've got more effects and more cash,
but with
charismatic just otherwise. Yeah, no, absolutely no charisma, and the effects now look dreadful. But that's the only way any of this makes sense. Why are they splitting up? Why does Qui-Gon end up in a forest full of like weird animals and a comical side character who adds nothing to the story in any way?
We need to get into that soon. Yeah, because it bothers me because they're I can't speak today. They're presumably going down on presumably going down on
each other. No,
not like that. On the little spaceships that are landing on the planet, right? So one could land in like John of Groats. The other one could land in Land's End.
Yeah, Naboo's End.
Naboo's End, yeah. Which is Frankie
Amidala
Howard.
Amidala of Groats.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's right. Oh, the cowards, yeah.
Don't. Jar Jar is a bit simple. Don't.
Don't.
Yeah, they could be like hundreds of fucking miles away from each other. So it makes no sense that they split up.
Yeah, I mean, why would they? And, you know, I suppose it's sort of if you go, oh, well, they can't take us both down so easily if we are on these little nippy things. But you don't even really, I don't remember seeing the ships they get in or how they get off the ship, really. They just suddenly turn up in a weird forest.
As you say, he turns up oddballs. In a weird forest full of really badly rendered animals.
Yes, comical side animals, yeah.
And Jar Jar Binks, and I think it was a deleted scene of him just sitting there eating, but he sees him. And he's like, get down. And Jar Jar's like, I don't understand what you mean, even though there's this big ship coming towards me.
Yeah. It's also really strange because you... So you have a... So Jar Jar's just stood there in the middle of this forest. And everything else there is just sort of fauna. It's just wildlife. Mm. And then there's this fish man standing there clothed just in the middle of this forest.
What was
and
he doing there?
And it's all a bit like... Well, yeah, and without any sort of introduction of like, here he is just hanging out doing his thing and like, oh, there's a rumble and he goes and investigates it. It is just like, the fuck is this? What's going on?
Where it does feel like something's been chopped out, doesn't it? Like a establishing scene's gone.
Several scenes. I'm not saying the film should be longer, but...
Oh, God, no. But before we get into Jar Jar, I want to talk about the man from Naboo who talks in reggae.
Who talks in reggae?
He talks exclusively in reggae. Like, if you were to dub him with a Jamaican accent... It would be much better because the Queen Amidala is trying to talk to them down on Naboo. Right. Communication goes, and he goes, "Communication disruption can mean only one thing: invasion." And then he says, "Negotiation. We've lost all communications."
So I'm like, that was
"Communication disruption
then...
can mean only one thing: invasion."
And,
negotiation.
And my queen, Ion Lion Zion. Jar bless.
No, we lost all communication.
That man is Oliver Ford Davis, a veteran screen and stage actor in the UK, playing the amusingly named C.O. Bibble. And I have a story about Oliver Ford Davis,
please.
John, which I think is relevant. So I went to the University of York, and they had a good relationship with Oliver Ford Davis through some contacts in the sort of media studies department I was in. And he came and did a talk for all of us aspiring actors and theatricals. And he was absolutely lovely. And a friend of mine, who's the actor Chris York, recommended to all casting directors and people who like meeting nice guys. Chris York was there. And Chris was absolutely buzzing that we had someone from The Phantom Menace coming to do a talk.
It was Jar Jar.
And he'd been sort of... exactly. He was absolutely buzzing about it, and he kept sort of talking to the tutors and the other tutors, going like, "Oh, Brett, I'm gonna ask him about Phantom Menace and what it was like, you know, working with Jar Jar Binks and all that." And it was sort of as a joke, you know. But so we do this talk, and OFD is telling all of his stories about, you know, the stage and various different sort of television adventures. And it's time for questions, and Chris, you know, I think, out of respect for this veteran actor, keeps his hand down. There's a bit of silence, and then Oliver Ford Davis goes, "I understand someone here wanted to ask me about Jar Jar Binks." And I just loved... I'll always remember how he said it, like Jar Jar Gabor, firstly. And then the really nice thing was that he just... It was very sort of sweet about him, about Ahmed Best. He was just saying, "It's funny, the character, Jar Jar Binks, because, you know, the young man that played him, it was so funny on set. We had a great time. It was really fun working with him. It really made us laugh. But then you put the computer stuff on it, it just doesn't work for some reason." So there he was. He was being very generous to poor Ahmed Best.
Ahmed had his... redemption this year, didn't he?
He did, yeah. He got to play a Jedi, right?
Yes, in The Mandalorian.
Good for him.
Good for him.
Well, there you go. That's one for the fans.
That must have been nice for him after probably nearly two decades of constant abuse.
Yeah, opprobrium, yeah. Constantly from all quarters, yeah.
All quarters. Him and Jake.
For ruining
Jake
Star
Lloyd.
Wars.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, you know, at least you got to meet the reggae man.
Reggae man. Iron Lion Zion. Jar Jar Binks. For the nation.
Negotiation. We lost all communication.
It's a very boring reggae song.
Let's get to it. Qui-Gon rescues Jar Jar Binks.
Yep.
I just put here, Jar Jar was a real roll of the dice, wasn't he? Like, they've put everything in on Jar Jar.
They've gone all in on Jar Jar.
And it immediately doesn't work. Yeah.
Yep, straight away. Mm-hmm. Annoying, looks bad, unfunny. Mm. Weird design that doesn't feel very Star Wars-y.
Yeah.
This is our first Star Wars film back in 20 years. Mm. We've got to throw everything at this thing.
Yeah.
And what we're going to throw at it is Jar Jar Binks.
Jar Jar Binks. And as I say, internet in the infancy, but you couldn't move for what we didn't know at the time were called memes.
Yes,
of
true.
Jar Jar Binks being murdered in various ways.
Oh, yeah. Animated things, little cartoons, yeah, fan art.
I saw a little video of the bit from Pulp Fiction where he accidentally shoots Marvin, but it's Jar Jar Binks and everyone's happy.
Yeah, it's no, that's horrible. The sort of thing that would happen, yeah, indeed.
But, you know, it is shit. So I don't know what they were expecting.
It is hard to get around now, in hindsight, how shit it is. Mm. I mean, you know, it's, again, as I say, according to Oliver Ford Davis, great fun on location.
Sure.
People going, this is going to be great. And then it just didn't work, because it doesn't.
No. But he says... And, he's
and
got
we meet a bunch more Jar Jar Binkses in a second,
well,
don't we? Moving on to Gungan City.
I also like that every now and then from this point onwards, you can notice the reshoots because suddenly Obi-Wan Kenobi's wearing the worst wig I've ever seen in my life.
Oh, right. Okay.
Yeah.
So I didn't even spot this.
The first one you see is the bit where Jar Jar says, I know the way, follow me, when they go into the water. And Obi-Wan ducks to avoid his ears when they swing round.
He
looks like, do you remember Dick Emery when he did that character that was a skinhead? Like, I've done it wrong again, Dad.
Oh, right.
He looks like that.
Okay. Yeah. I was thinking of that episode of, I think it's the last series of Frasier, where they've done this very high concept episode that goes through every single series of Frasier.
Mm.
And it's like, what a great idea. Brilliant. It's really well plotted. And it's really well structured episode, except they forgot that the actors used to have different hair. So they're like, oh, we haven't put any budget in for the wig. So it's like they went to like a costume shop at the last minute.
Jeez.
And, you know, Niles looks like he's wearing a sort of bizarre kind of like Jason Donovan wig or something to play himself as a younger man.
Yeah, it looks like that.
Anyway, that's like that, yeah.
So they're going to go... He basically says this invasion is going to... Fucking neighbours are banging on the walls now.
Oh, you know.
Fantastic.
That's just John's robo-penis fully worked up to a working state now and just tapping gently the underside of the desk.
Perfectly normal. Nothing wrong with that.
Very normal for a podcast recording.
So he says, you hear that sound? That's a sound of a thousand things. They will blast you into dust and grind you into oblivion. Don't promise me a good time. and he says,
don't threaten me with a good time.
There's an underwater city. I can take you there. And then actually he goes, actually, I can't.
Yeah, he suggests it, then immediately retracts it. Again, great. Not just an annoying character, an annoying way for a character's logic to work. Annoying way for it to affect the story.
So they go to the Gungan underwater city.
That's right.
I quite like this bit. It's nice music. I tell you what, John Williams brings his A-plus game to this film.
Oh, he absolutely does. I was thinking this is a huge leap ahead, but I was just thinking this morning about the first thing that came back into my mind thinking about talking about this film was how good that end parade music is.
Yeah.
That it takes us like bam, bam, bam into the end credits. Mm. And that's fantastic.
Yeah, and Jewel of the
really,
Fates,
really
of course.
Amazing. Of course, Duel of the Fates, huge one. That's, the big one everyone remembers.
Oh, amazing. So they go through, and then in the underwater city, there's another Gungan who says, Jar Jar, you in big doo-doo now.
That's right. Do you know who he is?
No, who?
Steve Spears.
Why do I know that name?
Welsh actor Steve Spears. Fantastic actor. He's in everything.
Oh, hang on.
He's,
is it the one I'm
best
thinking?
Known recently for creating the sitcom The Tuckers, which
oh,
has
my
just ended
God.
In...
Yes, I know him from Extras.
That's right, yes, he's in Extras as well. That's him. That's Steve Spears.
Wow, that's interesting.
On that space chicken horse.
You're a big doo-doo now, Jar Jar.
How many am I for a go? And, yeah, so Steve Spears is there, and he's like, all right, bud, Jar Jar, nice seeing you.
Oh, Jar Jar, you're in big trouble now, boyo.
Yeah.
And they go and meet Boss Nass. Now, do you know who voiced Boss Nass?
I certainly do, because he sounds exactly like him.
Yeah,
it's Brian Blessed, boys
Joe
and
Pasquale,
girls, isn't it?
What?
It's Joe Pasquale.
Yeah, Brian Blessed doing that blah, 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 thing that you know he did in the studio without
captured.
Being asked to.
Yeah, that's right. In the motion captured his jowls, little white dots just on the jowls to get that right.
Now, apparently, Jar Jar's in trouble down there because he is clumsy.
Yeah, he's an idiot, apparently.
He flew two planes into two towers.
Oh, God. There was no call for that whatsoever. How? All right, I've got so many questions. So they had a parallel September the 11th on Naboo. They had planes, not starships, planes.
Yeah.
And Jar Jar Binks somehow piloted both of them, one after the other.
Yeah.
Just okay.
By accident.
Well, that would at least.
I is what you call clumsy.
That was at the trial.
You killed thousands
of people.
And they
went, this isn't an excuse.
You indeed do it now. I said to him. And the second tower came down.
How wooed, he said in reaction.
My message throughout this entire film is to him, stop trying to make how rude happen.
I know.
It's not
going to
happen.
Guys, come on, please.
Anyway, so.
The timeless catchphrase.
He says he's in big trouble, and then Qui-Gon goes, well, you will help me, and does the old Jedi mind trick.
The old Jedi mind, which only works on fat blokes in positions of authority. It
That's
seems.
Right, yeah. And people who've got an octopus on their head.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. He says,
oh, no, it doesn't work on Jabba, though. Oh, my God.
It doesn't work on Jabba. It works on Bib Fortuna.
Bib Fortuna, who says, hello. Is there someone there?
Yeah, I can assure you, this isn't the least bit amusing.
Your Jedi mind tricks are not in the least bit amusing. Anyway, sorry, that's a different.
He
several
meets Han Solo and everyone afterwards and says, "You blew up the sail barge. You've made Jar Jar. You've made Jabba's family widows and orphans."
Yes, that's right. The ghost of Bib Fortuna.
That's right.
Anyway, so it doesn't work on Jabba, but it does work on Boss Nass, who promises to give Qui-Gon Una Bonko.
I thought he said Umbongo. I'll give you some Umbongo.
Give you some Umbongo. Yeah. He's promising him a bonko. And Qui-Gon goes, oh, you're all right, mate. Sorry, no offence. I'm not into it.
I'm just, you know, dinner maybe, but not that.
Mm. Yeah, buy me a drink first. Buy me some blue milk first, and then we'll talk.
So he before, as they're about to leave, Jar Jar's going to be executed by the sounds of it for doing an atrocity.
Yeah.
And Qui-Gon's like,
atrocity.
And Qui-Gon's like, I tell you what, we'll have him as well. Because I saved his life, so he owes me what you call a life debt.
A life debt. When did he find out about the life debt?
Just then.
From this culture he's just discovered for the first time.
Yeah. He read it on the instructions on the way in.
He read it on Wikipedia.
He did, yeah.
give me a second, Obi-Wan. Let me just check out who these guys are.
He checked the label on the Jar Jar.
And the expiry date. Three years ago.
Yeah, 3 years.
Yeah, no.
Would
right
have been
off.
Funny in 1967. Oh dear.
Maybe.
Yeah. Yeah. So he's like, be gone with you. So they go through the planet go.
The planet go. How? I mean, if there's a pop in this film, it is Boss Nass, isn't it? Like, let's be honest.
Eating his noodles with his pants around his ankles.
With his robes, spread open. Yeah, exactly.
Mm. The planet's core. Is probably one of the good bits in the film with lots of like icky big monsters, which is always fun for kids.
This is what I imagine Avatar: The Way of Water is like, but just for 3 hours.
Yeah, I think it is.
Am I right? I haven't seen it. I'm
not seen it.
That's...
Not interested.
No. Okay. Neither of us. Have... So we both like films, and neither of us has decided to see Avatar: The Way of Water.
Yeah.
Does that say something?
I think it does, because everyone I've met who's actually seen it, which is not that very many, I say, "What was it like?" And they always, to a uniform effect, go, "It's all right."
Right.
No one says, wow, it was just amazing. They go, it's all right.
And nobody goes, oh, it's appalling.
No, they just go, it's all right.
Yeah. Some things are all right, aren't they? They're just okay.
Yeah. Like going through the planet core.
The planet core, which is fine in the end. It's absolutely fine. Mm. Because there's always a bigger fish.
Always. You know what? I always think that when I'm pulling out, when I'm waiting at a junction in my car and there's lots of cars.
Yeah.
There's a gap and I always think, there's always a bigger fish. Does that make me mentally ill? Just asking.
I think it does. Yeah. I mean, I would suggest you consult an expert, not me. Yeah. But you know, I would suggest you speak to a doctor.
I think you should speak to this doctor who lives in the planet. God.
The planet. God. One of those fish is a doctor. They don't go into it.
No, but, it's the one with the arms, right?
That's right. Yeah, because he can write the prescriptions.
That's right, and his handwriting's very bad. So that makes sense.
Oh, it's terrible. I mean, have you seen the sort of state of his flippers on the? Yeah,
well, he has to write on a tiny, teeny notepad.
Yeah,
for it to be
human-sized.
And
then the water gets to it, and then all the writing's blurred and, you know,
well,
and ink all...
Someone bought him one of those pens where it works underwater, but of course the pad doesn't. pad gets all wet.
No, it's just still paper, isn't it? That's the issue. Mm. That's the issue. There's always a bigger fish. Really stays in my memory as like it's because it does linger for moments like when you're pulling into traffic or whatever it is. Or you see, you know, a bigger animal eat a smaller one.
Yeah.
That's right, yeah. But it's also said as though it has some greater meaning.
Yeah.
And I would posit that it does not.
It does not, no.
Have any greater meaning.
Again, it speaks to the character of Qui-Gon Jinn because in a minute, so they say to him, where are we going? And he goes, don't worry, the Force will guide us. In other words, I've no idea.
Yeah. No. All the appearance of wisdom, but none of the substance at all.
It's like when you say, what are we eating for dinner tonight, Dad? And he says, don't worry, God will provide for us.
God will provide. You go, right, so I better go out and go to McDonald's or something.
Yeah, we haven't got anything.
Yeah, there's nothing. We couldn't afford dinner. Yeah.
So the invasion starts.
Beautiful. Another lovely theme.
Love it.
Amidala's dress, the famous red one.
Stupid,
it has little amber pods around the hem. One of the stupid things about it is it has little amber pods. And I reckon, right, they're full of mosquitoes, which at some point drank Amidala's blood so that InGen can clone her later.
Perfect.
If she needs more handmaidens.
So in what you're positing is in future, if there is a John Hammond on Naboo.
Yeah, exactly.
He'll have one of them on the end of his cane.
Genetics. That's right. And then there'd be a little tour where Danny DNA, or whatever his name was, tells us all about how this is where we get our Queen Amidala's from. And there's just always the same Queen Amidala's on the throne.
Did you say you have a Queen Amidala? Yes, we have a Queen Amidala.
We have a Queen Amidala.
That's all we've got. What?
And then there's a giant field, you know. They pull the car up. Sam Neill leaps out. He's going, and then you know, he grabs Laura Dern's head, turns it round to the right direction, and then they look over, and it's just Queen Amidala stood in the field.
Stood in the field on her own.
Yeah. Waves. She waves eventually.
Acting very badly.
Doing a strange. Amidala
off,
herself seems to. Yeah. She. So Padme, obviously, she can just sort of be a person, and that's a little bit easier. But Amidala herself has a strange. It's like, you know, Elizabeth Holmes, the Theranos fraudster. It's like she's learnt a sort of statesmanly, like, what if you could test for midichlorians with a single drop of blood? And it's like, that's what Amidala does when she's in the cozy, you know, being the queen. And, you know, it's like, I would like to speak to the trade delegation from... Yeah, it's all like that. It was very odd. And strangely, like, an accent that is hard to place because I think it's just dignified is the accent in question. So, yeah, very strange.
But when she is captured as the queen, you know, for years and 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 years...
Yes.
I didn't realise that Keira Knightley was playing her as the queen for a bit.
Well, she does look like her, and it's really nicely done. And all the extreme makeup means it distracts you just enough. This time I could sort of see it, but I think that's mainly because Keira Knightley is a lot more famous now.
Yeah,
so you identify her more readily. But yeah.
So she's captured, and then the Jedi and Jar Jar.
Yes.
There's a really cool bit here, and it kind of sums up Jar Jar's character, that the Jedis leap down from this sort of rooftop bit.
Yeah.
To take out all of the droids and the music starts. And Jar Jar just kind of falls out like a fat man out of a window and lands on the floor. You're like why
Uncle
is
Vernon
he here?
Out of a window.
You're undercutting your excitement by having this big floppy idiot in the background.
Yeah, that's right, indeed. And I think that's a problem that this film has generally. I mean, famously, the spoilers, you know, heroic death of Qui-Gon Jinn is interspliced with very enormous battle scale physical comedy from Jar Jar Binks and the rest of the Gungans. It's a strange juggling of tone. Very, very odd.
It makes you wonder.
I always like the look of Naboo though, and I like the sort of the weird sort of chauffeur outfits that the Queen's Guard has. And it's like everything is very streamlined and narrow a lot of the time, especially these days with science fiction design. But Naboo looks like sort of an Art Nouveau painting, and I really like how bright and colourful all that stuff is.
Yeah.
I don't really feel like we get any sense of what Naboo is like as a place though. So I never quite understand the stakes of like, oh no, this museum, I think, might be have trade sanctions put on it. It's not very clear.
Not really clear what they do or what they provide as an industry.
That's indeed. What is your life if they had some sort
of, if they had some sort of precious, like, I don't know, spice.
Yeah.
Would make more
or
sense.
A thing they made that only they could make that was a particularly. They make the lasers that come out of. That's right, yeah. Mm. Yeah, they make a really beautiful royal costuming. That's what they, I think that must be what C.O. Bibble is. He's like the galaxy's greatest royal costumer.
Yeah, I think he is.
And yeah, and that's why he's so valuable.
Come and get your costumes. Oh no, an invasion.
Now, this is one of my favourite bits. They rescue Amidalia, and your man who went did the lectures, was he called Bibble? He turns to Qui-Gon and goes, your negotiations have failed then. And Qui-Gon's like, they never took place, cunt. All right, shut up.
You fucked up, didn't you?
Yeah.
It's all right, mate. I've just gone in space and that. You've just been sat here making more delicious dresses.
Been sat here doing fucking...
absolutely sensational royal headdresses.
Doing a duet with UB40.
That's right, yeah. Exactly. Talking about the rat in the kitchen and, you know...
I tell you what you're going to do. Get rid of it, idiot.
Yeah, get rid of you as well.
Yeah.
Wasting all this bloody money. This is the problem. This is the reason the droids are taking over so easily. You spent all the bloody Queen's resources on making more and more elaborate dresses.
You spent the defence budget on a load of doobies.
Doobies and gold lame.
Unbelievable.
Getting baked out of your mind. What if she had like a massive hair helmet?
What if she had two giant... door pulls, or the things you call a butler on either side of her head.
What if, okay, my concept for the next one is Ming Dynasty Yak. That's the pitch.
Japanese meets CNA.
That's what we're looking for. Yeah. That's right. Furniture, but for your head.
So they get to the, he goes, we got to get to a ship. They get to the hangar, kill the robots within about, 3 seconds?
No problem.
Get on the ship, fly off, take away. Ralph Brown turns up.
Yeah, Danny from Withnail and I.
Yeah.
He's getting baked with C.O. Bibble, the reggae superstar of Naboo.
Yeah. It kind of sounds like a reggae name as well, doesn't it?
Naboo, yeah.
No, C.O. Bibble.
Oh, C.O. Bibble.
C.O.
Yeah,
Bibble
right.
And Pato Banton.
C.O. Bibble, he have a dribble and a quibble.
Yeah. Invasion.
For the nation, yeah.
Communication.
This has really tickled you, hasn't it?
It has. It made me laugh. I just kept thinking about him saying it in a Jamaican accent.
For the nation.
Yeah. It's just really bad dialogue.
It's very, if anyone who checked that would go, this is going to sound weird coming out of someone's mouth.
You can't have two words in the same sentence that rhyme.
It's distracting, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So they get through the Federation blockade, in inverted commas, which, by having lots of droids go out and fix the shield...
Sure.
And R2-D2 fixes it. Why is R2-D2 and C-3PO in this film?
I don't know. Thing of the whole pitch for all three films is, where did this thing come from? Find out. And then I think that's just the first appearance of that. Really weird that Anakin built C-3PO.
It makes no sense.
This makes much more sense for R2. He's just another droid servicing planes, but he just manages to do one particularly brave thing, and you go, oh, what a brilliant brave little droid.
He gets an
award. That's fine.
What about a funeral for the ones who died?
No, fuck them, they're not important.
Fuck them.